Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Oh, I thought we were going to continue.
Yeah.
All right. Control room, go ahead and run the intro.
Go ahead and run the intro.
All right.
There you go.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
There we are.
There we are. Mike and I were talking before the show started about, I do taxes. I volunteer to do taxes. He asked me what's the most someone's had to pay, and it was around $1,500, almost $1,500. But they were okay with it because they expected it. You know, they really did. And I also had a couple that got $7,500 back. And
wow.
Yeah. I'm going, $7,500. I said, you know, there's that two schools of thought. One, when you get that much back, you're letting the government play with your money for the year, and then you get it back. And, you know, why do that? Just, you know, they said, oh, we know. We expect every year we plan on. But they had money taken out of Social Security and stuff like that, and they had taxes taken out of just about everything. So, therefore, accumulated.
Yeah.
You know, but your programs, if you owe over $1,000, the IRS looks at it and sends you a letter and it states, if you owe over $1,000, you might want to do a quarterly payment. And they start setting you up on a quarterly payment. So you're paying like $250 every quarter. And so that you won't owe that $1,000 at the end of the year. And, you know, they do that. So we have a guest tonight, Giles Martin. And he has really quite a story to tell us where he is now. He is a champagne maker in Long Island, but he took quite a road to get there. So what we're going to do is he's in the green room. We're going to pull him away from all the snacks and everything in the green room and get him onto the show and have him talk to us. So welcome to All About Wine, Giles.
Yes, hi. Good evening.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the time out to join us. So, I was just mentioning before we brought you on the show how, I mean, you have quite a story, quite a history in the wine industry. I think we're going to start out by having you tell us where you were born and what your path has led you to where you are now.
Yes, yes, it's a long story. I hope we have enough time.
We have plenty of time.
I was born in France a few years back, of course, and I got interested with winemaking as a little boy, where I grew up on a farm where my grandfather actually had orchards and was actually not making wine, but cider, and that's how I got in contact with, anything that ferments, if I can use the expression, the transformation of fruit to a beverage. And and I grew up, I was kind of attracted to the scientific world, and I love biology and studied biology in high school and went on to do a degree in food industry and food chemistry and biotechnologies. And from that stage, actually, I had an uncle in south of France who was actually also a winemaker for a research station. And he's the one who actually attracted me to this world. And I said, well, why not? There's a lot of science into winemaking and quite a bit of art. I never wanted to actually sit behind a desk, and that's the reason why I went that way.
Mm-hmm. And so you graduated from college and started work for your uncle. So he taught you everything about wine, or was he he actually became a champagne?
He was in south of France, and he actually was working for a research station. And so I started to make wine with him in my early 20s. And from there, I decided to see the world of wines, and I traveled. First, I did my studies in Montpellier, in south of France, and then I decided to travel, and I went to Germany first and Australia and came back to France, and I was back to France a couple of years later. One of my professors called me and said, Gilles, somebody's looking for a winemaker in America, and well, I know you've been traveling and have that cut that virus of traveling. And I said, yes. And I end up being going working in Virginia. So that's where I started. In Virginia, I worked for a vineyard called Oasis Vineyard, no longer in existence. And I realized that the big world of wine was actually in California. So from Virginia, I went to California in the early 90s and worked for a known house of champagne called Roederer. And I was there 6 years with them, and back and forward with France as well to get more education and more experience of that champagne world, that champagne making called the Méthode Champenoise. And from there, I actually went back to France through the same group for a house of red wine in the Côte d'Or area. And I stayed there for a couple of years. And at the same time, I met my wife. And after our first child, we had to decide where we wanted to raise our kids when the second came, and we decided to go back to the States because my wife is a professor at Rutgers University in New Jersey.
So
Long Island was the perfect setting for us to settle and raise our two children.
So you have been a fan of champagne for pretty much your whole life, or is it something that you just discovered an area that you loved about champagne?
Through my line of work that I discovered the champagne world with the big houses of champagne like Champagne Roder and Champagne Dutz as well that I work for as well. And through that experience, when I first came to Long Island, I told the people, but you know, I like to do that over there. I mean, it's something that really need a good experience, a good savoir-faire that I acquired, and I was ready to give that to the area. And at first, people were hesitating a little bit. Yeah, we can do a little bit of sparkling, but you know, at the same time, we want to keep the still wine and. It's only in 2003 that I've met Tom and Cynthia Rosicki, the owner of Sparkling Point, who actually wanted to do that venture, and that's how Sparkling Point was born, with the idea that we will only produce sparkling wine on Long Island.
Oh, so you met them at the very beginning. They were not established when...
No.
When you that's I didn't understand that, huh? Well, very good.
No. Actually, I did work with them, and they relied on me. They give me carte blanche to actually plant the vineyard, choose the varieties for the vineyard, and all the equipment, and the later on the building the winery. Participated to that, to do all the technical aspect of that building, and that's how Sparkling Point was born. 2004 we planted the first vineyard, then 2009 we completed the winery. So since 2010 all the different operation of winemakings are done at Sparkling Point.
I see. Now you said plant the first vineyard. You have three vineyards now, I understand?
Yes, we have. We grew from a first vineyard of 10 acres to now a total of about 40 acres of vineyards. And we have specific varieties that we use in the Méthode Champenoise, Chardonnay, Meunier, and Pinot Noir, as well as a couple others that are not part of the Champagne tradition, which is Merlot and Muscat.
Oh, okay. Then that's only five that you do plant, just those five there, and then it's all going into the Champagne.
Yes. So if you want to make a Champagne or a sparkling wine, like respecting the Méthode Champenoise, we're going to use the three first ones, the Chardonnay, the Meunier, and the Pinot Noir. And if you
right.
want to do something special, like we do a red sparkling wine, we use Merlot for that with a bit of Chardonnay. And if we want to do something a little different, we use a little Muscat to one of our blend, which is called Carnaval Blanc. So this is, you know, the beauty of not having rules is you can do the best you can or you choose to do in order to create new wines that may not exist elsewhere.
Right, that's very true. Are the vineyards close to the winery?
Very close. Very close. Everything is within 3 miles radius from the vineyard. Yes, very close.
That close? Wow. Okay, you are on Long Island. What? Give me an idea of what part of Long Island you are on.
This is the North Fork of Long Island.
Okay.
If you take the ferry in Orion Point, it's all the way to the top of the North Fork. We're about, I would say, two-thirds into the fork in a town called Southold.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, so you're quite a ways up there then. No wonder, I'm sure that the water has a big influence on the vineyards then.
Absolutely, that's why we have a fantastic terroir on Long Island, is we are surrounded by three body of water, as you know, the Sound, the Peconic Bay, and the ocean a little further south. And those three body of water play a big role into the climate, keeping our temperature a little warmer during the winter, about 10 degrees warmer, and almost 10 degrees cooler during the summer. So we have a more consistent climate around us.
Yeah, that's wow. I didn't realize it would control that much. Now, I've talked to other wineries up in Long Island, and they have all mentioned about how bad the bird problem is during the migrations. Do you cover or net your vineyards during migration?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you don't do that, you might lose all your fruit. So, luckily for the luckily and unluckily for us, for the variety we're using, we harvest them a little earlier than most of our colleagues that are making still wines. So most of the time there is no much pressure. But some years somehow they come earlier or they come later, and if you don't cover your vines, you won't get any berries. And also we have other predators of the grapes, like the raccoons or a lot of different animals that really see the dessert on the table right there in front of their nose. So.
Yeah. Ooh, look what you grew for me.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just when I've talked to Long Island wineries, that always fascinates me because I think you guys are about the only ones in the country who actually have to worry about birds that much. It's right there, and it seems to attack everybody right there. The winery itself, you do everything, like you said, everything in the traditional method of Champagne. But how many, well, describe it. How many tanks, what is the operations in the winery?
So the winery is a French manor-style building with the upper level pretty much set up to receive the public. And it's open for tasting almost every day of the year except for the major holidays. And the lower level is actually reserved for the winemaking part, where we have about 40 tanks of a volume of 200 to 2,600 gallons.
Wow.
And we're producing about 6,000 to 7,000 cases of sparkling every year. We have about 120 to 150 tons of grapes that we work with every year. And that's quite a nice operation for the area.
Yeah, I can imagine. You have a bottling machine. I was reading on, you know, press release you sent me. And when I had the winery, I mean, I'm looking at a bottling machine on the still wines that I used to do, but on sparkling wines, a bottling machine with sparkling wines, and especially doing it in the traditional method, it seems like it would create more problems. I don't know. Explain the bottling operation.
Just to explain quickly the method Champenoise, we make wine a little bit like you'll be making white wines, except that we pick the grapes a little bit earlier in terms of ripening. They're about 18 to 19 bricks. That will give us wines that are about 10.5% to 11% alcohol. So less alcohol, but a little more acidity to the wines. And then when it comes to bottling, we add sugar and yeast to the wine so that when we bottle that mixture of wine and sugar and yeast, there is a second fermentation that happens into the bottle, and that second fermentation will lead to an increase of pressure. That's about 90 psi, which is about three times what you have in your car tires. So you can imagine that it's quite a bit of pressure in those bottles.
Right.
And that what gives us the nice effervescence into the wine, the lovely bubbles that we enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your bottling is actually done before you start getting too much pressure on it from the fermentation. So,
yes. If not, there are other methods where, like the Chama method or the forced carbonation, where actually you do work under pressure. We do not work under pressure. The pressure happens in the bottle. So once that second fermentation is completed, we have different programs where we leave the wine sitting on the yeast for anywhere between 12 months to 8 years.
Wow.
During that time, the wine gained from the yeast cells certain aromatic components like the doughiness, the toastiness, some almondy characters that will complete the panel of aroma of those wines. But at the same time, we have to get rid of that sediment by what we call riddling the wine, meaning that we're going to bring that sediment that lay on the side of the bottles onto the top of the chrome cap that we've been closing the bottle with. And then we will remove that sediment by freezing the neck of the bottle. That will create a nice plug onto that sediment. And that sediment will be then popped out. When we open that chrome cap, the sediment will pop out the bottle under the pressure. And then we can actually, at that time, add a little bit of what we call a liqueur de dosage or liqueur d'expédition, which is actually a mix of sugar and wine that will polish a little bit the style of that cuvée. And then we put the cork that you know, that mushroom-shaped cork, and with that little wire hood on top. And that's how, after we put the labels on the bottles and the top foil, that's how you will enjoy the bottle of wine.
No, okay. So you freeze the neck of it. Okay. I was curious about that, how that is done. Do you do riddling by hand or machine?
We do all the riddling by machine. By hand it takes about almost a month to riddle a wine. By machine it's about a week, and you have 500 bottles that are getting riddled at the time into those machines. Those are what we call gyro pallets, big cages that rotate from the horizontal position up to the vertical position, where the sediment will be going down into the neck of the bottle.
Right, yeah. The riddling has always fascinated me. I learned about that many, many years ago, and I've seen videos of it and all that, and that's always fascinated me about riddling of the champagne bottles to get the sediment down to the neck. But I'm always curious about, you know, is there another method besides freezing it that can be used to remove the sediment?
Some people do what we call disgorging at the flight, meaning that as you raise the neck of the bottle, the air bubble that's traveling on top of the glass will, as soon as it touches the sediment, you have to open the crown cap, and then the pressure will eject that sediment out of the bottles. But if you miss that timing, the sediment will go back into the wine, dirty the wine again. So it's quite a difficult task. We have machines now, small machines that are working that way, but most of the disgorging those days are done with the freezing method. That's guaranteed the cleanliness of the wine.
Okay. I have heard and I have seen the old method, but I never realized that they're all doing freezing now. So that would be a lot easier. But are you still able to do your chemical test and all that? Your original passion, are you still involved with that?
Most of the analyses are actually done on site. We check the berries for sugar, acid, and pH, and same thing with the wine, where we add also the alcohol and, of course, the sulfites. We can check also different type of acid, like the malic acid. All those tests are done on site. If we had a very specific analysis that we don't have the equipment for, we will have that done outside. You have very well-known laboratories in California that can perform very, very deep analyses on wine.
Yeah. And, I'm just curious, you mentioned all the stuff you're testing for. Have you had any problems with fires, smoke taint or anything on the vineyards there?
No, luckily for us, despite that period of heavy smoke we got from Canada, this past year in 23, we didn't have
issues with that.
Any issues with that? Actually, it didn't come at the time where it penetrated the berries, like we've seen in certain area of the country, like in California or in Washington State. No, we got lucky for that. It wasn't there long enough, or maybe concentrated enough, to arm our grapes. So we were lucky. But boy, that was quite a scene, I have to say. Those fires.
It was something. I mean, we're down here in Florida, and there was about a week period where we smelled the smoke from it down here. So it pretty much spread across the country. It seemed like. This nasty stuff. Your wines themselves, I want to talk a little bit about those too, and the methods, not the making method, but the sugars, how sweet they are. I noticed there's a couple on here of your list of wines back in 12 vintage. Do you still have those sitting around? I mean, that seems like...
Yes, so we don't have the 12 any longer, but we do have the 2014. This is the cuvée called Cuvée Sediction, and that cuvée, I have to confess, that's how the title comes from, the fact that that's how I seduced my wife with a bottle of wine, of champagne. I have to say, yes, we do. So this is that that cuvée that aged about 8 years on the yeast and gains a lot of those toastiness, doughiness characters. It's like a mature champagne, a little bit like the Dom Pérignon of starting point, if I can abuse the term.
Of course. and then you have some that are...
So some have no. So in sparkling wine, in champagne, you often have a little bit of residual sugar in it. It's because those wine, as I mentioned earlier on, the grapes are picked a little early and have quite a bit of acidity. So to balance the acidity, we use a little bit of sugar. You don't really realize that the sugar is there. It's not very sweet, but it helps to balance that aggressivity of the acidity, and also to increase a little bit the volume of the wine when you taste the wine. But what I want to say, we have also a wine which is called Brut Nature that has zero sugar added at disgorging. Otherwise, the others have naturally about 6 grams of sugar, except for the sweeter wine that can be up to 18 grams of sugar.
Wow. Those are sweet, yeah.
That's for the sweet palate.
And people think champagnes, a lot of people like the sweet champagnes too, so that serves a purpose there quite well. How did your dry wines, your Brut and stuff like that, how dry are they? You mentioned the sugar levels of the sweet. Are the Brut very dry?
So the Brut is 6 grams of residual sugar per liter, which is not very sweet. It's, as I said, you barely feel the sugar. It's just to balance that acidity. And as I mentioned also, that Brut Nature has no sugar added, so it's zero sugar in it. And that's to balance the natural acidity of the wine. I use what we call reserve wines. Those are wines that are aged either in oak or in stainless steel. And I will, by the maturity of the wine, that will naturally balance that acidity in the wine. So you won't even feel that the wines have more acidity, but they're richer into flavors and oak aroma.
Oh, okay. That makes sense now. It just came together in my head.
Good.
I was just doing it. Let me get rid of this here. Mike, go ahead and talk to him for a second here. I have to get this call.
Okay. He didn't mute his mic. I wasn't sure if he was if he had muted it or not. I had a question too right before he told me to come up here. Let me just throw this out there real quick. Are you still there? I wasn't sure if you're still hanging on or not. You still tuned in?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you started real early and you got into it. It seems like as a child. If you could go back to those days and tell yourself, you know, something else, knowing what you know now, would you do anything different about how you got into this industry?
That's a very good question. As I mentioned earlier, I never wanted to sit behind a desk. That I felt that being a banker, being an administrative, wasn't for me. I like to be outdoor. I like to see new things, get out of the box. And that's why I started to study science and biotechnologies and chemistry as well as winemaking. So I would say today, if I have to do it again, I certainly will do something similar. Maybe not wine, maybe beer or something else, I don't know. Maybe not necessarily the food industry, but something that will keep me traveling and see the world. And food and wine are certainly the two things that helps you to travel and meet people and enjoy different culture and enjoy even your neighbor. It's a fantastic world to share.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a good conversation piece as well. So
yeah. No, thank you, Mike. I'm back. I have a very good friend of mine who was put in the hospital yesterday and very sick, and I noticed the phone call was from his wife, and I was a little concerned, and so I wanted to get it and see how he was doing, but he's doing better. So thank you for the interruption. I was concerned, and I didn't want to wait and miss that call. So I'm back. You mentioned food there. I heard you all talk about food. Were you comparing combinations of champagne with foods?
Yes. what I was talking about is the fact that being in that world of wine, it's the first other topic or world that we will connect to is the world of food. And of course, we have a lot of chefs with whom we share a lot of ideas in terms of food pairing with wine, and I think it makes things very, very interesting. We regularly do tasting with those chefs, and just had one actually in Montauk at Gurney's a couple of weeks ago. That was very, very interesting, and people were very enthusiastic to actually drink only sparkling with the whole meal. And we have so many different type of wine that can complement the type of food that the chef served. Makes the experience fantastic.
I'm always mentioning the benefits of having sparkling wine. It's not just something that you should have with a celebration or New Year's or any of that stuff, but it's something that you can enjoy any time with any meal and enjoy it tremendously with different meals. And I'm always bringing up that point, so it's good to hear that you basically agree with me on that. That is something that is it can go
I
match about anything.
It's certainly the wine that will bring the fun to the party, because somehow the combination of that light alcohol and that effervescent, that CO2, make people happy faster somehow.
It does.
And it's but what's more important to talk about is like with the Brut Nature that I created is now we're talking about wine that have more wine that you're looking for their vinous characteristic or qualities. Those are serious wine that have very serious type of aroma that you will discover and enjoy even more with food.
Yeah.
So it's not only that, as you mentioned, but also the fact that you appreciate those wines with pairing it with food. It's very interesting.
Well, and you brought up something that was very interesting, and I don't talk about it much. I'm aware of it, but I don't. And it's the fact that the aromas from the champagnes can enhance the aromas from the meal too. I mean, you smell something set on the table in front of you, and you go, "Oh, that smells good," but then that aroma coming from the champagne, when you smell that, not just the taste, but the aroma can enhance everything also. So, you know.
And because they're also wine that are a little bit more acidic than regular wines, they also will help to cut into the fat and really bring that world of aromatics into your mouth. I mean, the flavors, the aroma really explodes into your mouth as you're eating and tasting those wines.
Exactly. Yes. I want to talk about something else here. The vineyard, it is sustainably farmed and grown. Is it just sustainable? Is it organic? Are you looking at doing possibly
sustainability is actually done with a local association, which is Long Island Wine Sustainability Certification, and pretty much it regulates the type of spray program that you can use. But it's not only that; it's also everything that has to do with the environment, making sure that you recycle the proper way, making sure that you're taking care of your environment. You know, as you know, we are sitting on one of the largest aquifer in the U.S. So you don't want to pollute your water. You don't want to harm your water around you. And that's part of our program. So it is to think of, you know, all the components of farming that are around you that will preserve your environment and make the wine also better for generations to come.
And it does, too. So the sustainability movement that we're seeing now in wineries throughout the country is just becoming such a large part of the wine industry. It's really fantastic. And I say across the country, but I'm sure it's around the world, too. We're finding the sustainability movement is in all sorts of certifications and different areas.
And I think it's because you have that local food movement. People want to eat food that are produced close to them, that they can actually know where it's coming from. It's actually right there. They can see the field. They can appreciate the crop that those fields support. And at the same time, they want to make sure that people are respecting also the environment as well and the way they grow the food. And that's a fantastic thing to think about, because that was the way of the past and can be also the way of the future.
And you're right. It is a fantastic thing to think about and what we can do to continue helping the planet, because heaven knows we've destroyed it quite a bit up to this point. So if we can turn it around and start getting it better, then it can only be good for everybody and everything concerned. Let's see. You guys, recycling. Do you recycle everything there, or do you just sort of like play at the game? I mean, and I say that not to be not the facetious. It's just that so many times when you see places that say they're recycling, they will take cardboard boxes and break them down and throw them in the recycle bin. Do you take that further
with
everything?
We are separating glass, cardboard, and the rest of the trash. So basically, the two first ones are recycled, and the rest are just regular trash. So they, our main products are glass and cardboard, and that's what's recycled. Yes, I think it's important to be able to do that. It's also something that is in demand. Carton is highly in demand, even on the island, with more and more production done on the island. The carton is a very fantastic material to recycle, and glass as well. Not maybe as easy to recycle than but it is something that needs to be done, absolutely.
Yeah, we in the county that I live in, they quit recycling glass. They said there's just no market for it anymore down here, which really is rather disappointing, because so much glass is used. I'm really surprised at how much glass is being used.
I think it's something maybe that the county should reconsider and then understand that it's doable, but you have to want to do it. That's one of the issues.
Yeah, and sometimes that can be difficult just in itself, but in the long run, it's going to work out. I want to talk for a few minutes here about Tom and Cynthia. Why did they decide to go sparkling wine? Was it because of you?
Not really. it's just because they always been drinking champagne and sparkling wine, and because at their first time they met, they drank champagne, and that's their beverage of choice, and that's what they love to drink. And when they decided to go into that venture of growing grapes and making wine, the first thing that came to their mind was champagne and sparkling wine. And that was a fantastic idea, because when we met together, I just told them that you are the people I was waiting for. So that was my my message I was trying to pass through Long Island. It said, we can do that. It's been done. And look at Napa, look at California and other places in the country. Some of those French houses settled there. And they grew well up to today, when we see that the wine consumption decrease in the world, the consumption of sparkling wine and champagne actually grows. So
right.
That was the perfect choice that they made at the time, and we actually beneficiate from that growth of specific wine that are the sparkling wines.
So their idea of a winery was to make sparkling wine. That
absolutely
was their.
Oh, yeah.
That seems odd, especially in New York. You don't picture New York as a big hotbed of sparkling wine, but I suppose it could be. You know, are you one of many places in New York that you know of that do sparkling wines, or is it just an extra bottle?
So, in terms of making. As a winery making solely sparkling wine, we are the only one on Long Island, and we might be only two in New York State, because
wow.
The other one is Constantine Frank with Chateau Frank. But at the same time, they have a brand that's called Chateau Frank, and that makes only sparkling, but they also have their regular wine. So that maybe makes us the only one, actually. That only makes sparkling wine in New York. And I think that drew a lot of people to us, because they know that we have the expertise and we have a lot of different products that will suit different style of wine. So we only make sparkling, and we're known for that. Actually, I was in New Jersey at a conference this week, where people actually was very interested by the fact that sparkling wine was still a driving force into the wine market. So we are today, Sparkling Point today is known through the East Coast to be one of the leaders of the quality of sparkling wine, but also we won big awards overseas in London and also in California as well. So we started to be known as a serious sparkling wine place.
Oh, you say London. England has really a big sparkling wine industry. To win awards there amongst those, that is quite a coup, as is in California. There are some really popular big names in California in sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But
really comfort us into the fact that Long Island is certainly one of the superb place and terroir on the East Coast to grow grapes and make great wines.
Yeah, and it's fascinating how Long Island has exploded in wineries and growing grapes and all that over the last 25 years. It's just amazing. You mentioned something there which made me want to ask. You said different wineries have come to you in New York and around the area asking about sparkling wines. Are you consultants on others for sparkling wine, or
we do help our neighbors in that are not fortunate to have the requirement equipment to make sparkling wine. We do help them to produce their own sparkling wines as well.
Okay, very good.
They can beneficiate of our facility to create some specific wines as well. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's very good. All right. Yeah, that's one thing I have noticed about wineries, though. Wineries are very open and very congenial when it comes to talking about their wines and sharing information, all that. It's not, oh, this is a secret, I'm not going to tell you about it, because it's just basically wine. You know, so, when, you know, it's a matter of tweaking it and doing things the proper way that you actually are looking
exactly.
at doing.
And nothing repeats the experience of an area and the experience of the winemaker to manage those difficult years and to make great wines in every vintages.
Yeah, yeah, that's and you know, and vintages makes a big difference. Do you vintage your wines? I was just
yes,
I don't think
most of our wines are vintage.
Oh yeah, yeah, they are. Aren't they? Okay.
70% of our wines are vintage. Yes.
Yeah, I see that. I was it wasn't.
Yeah,
wasn't
a couple reason
it.
For that. First of all, in our line of work, sparkling wine, we do have an area where we can ripen our grapes maybe to a fuller maturity than in Champagne, for example, which is in a more northern location. And for that reason, we are able to do great sparklings year after year, so we can vintage them year after mm-hmm. year. And some of them are not because by desire, because not only we're going to blend different vintage in them, but also different varieties that are maybe not part of the traditional méthode champenoise.
Mm, okay. Oh, all right. Very good. You are in the Long Island AVA there. Is there another smaller AVA that you're in, or is it just Long Island?
So, no, on Long Island, we have the choice of Long Island, North Fork, and Hamptons. So we can choose one of the three, including New York, of course. And we do use North Fork of Long Island as an AVA.
North Fork, okay. Yeah, I should have known that. All right, very good. Mike, is there any other comments or questions you have here for Giles?
Not at this time. I think I'm good. Just enjoying it. So interesting show for sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Very good.
Interesting stuff about what he's done at Sparkling Point and all the wines that have came out of there. Let's see. Well, before I have you give, you know, the final stuff, any other comments or anything that you'd like to make here, Giles?
Yes, of course. I want to tell people that we open every day of the year except for the major holidays, and they should come and visit us and have a great time. We have a superb team at the tasting room that will welcome them and suggest a different style of flight of wines to taste, and we accommodate that with a little bit of food if they need to. Nothing very fancy, just to keep your stomach a little full you're tasting those wines, and they will enjoy a nice terrace outdoor or indoor. We have a superb fireplace that we run at this time of the year when the weather is all cheap. So, enjoy the settings over there. It's a beautiful. We have beautiful sunset as well at this time of the year. The skies are beautiful when the sun comes down. The lights is fantastic, I have to say. And it's always a little breezy, brings you a little a little sweater at night.
Yeah. For us from here in Florida, bring your heavy coats. Before you go, give us the website, the Facebook page, contact, your operating hours, your location, phone numbers, anything that if anyone's listening, they want to go and check out the website or visit or anything, they've got all the information.
So Sparkling Point is located at 39750 County Road 48 in South Hall, New York. And then the website is www.sparklingpoint.com. You also need to go on the website to find all the information, also to come and visit us. All the visits are on a reservation. Very easy site to go to, very informative. You have all the descriptions of the wine, the locations, the people. And also, you can buy online as well. We ship in quite a bit of state around us, so you can actually have the wine be shipped to you very easily by the click of a mouse.
Is appointments necessary for tastings?
Most of the time, yes, particularly during weekends and particularly during the summer. During the week, if you call just a little bit ahead, we will let you know if we have space. But it's fairly possible, except during the vacation time, that the testing room has room to welcome extra people. But I will encourage people always to go on the website. It's very well made and very easy to visit and to make an appointment in a few clicks.
Yeah, I've been looking at the website. It is very well put together. It's easy to follow and easy to navigate. And there are some gorgeous pictures of the winery and the area around there on the website also. So even if people are not looking for anything particular, it's always a pleasure just to look at the different pictures of the winery and the area around there and all that. So again, it's Sparkling Point with sparklingpoint.com and take you right there. So,
and the phone number, I didn't give it to you, is 631-765-0200.
Okay, and get a hold of them anytime. If you're in, how far are you? Someone's up there in New York City, say, how far?
By car, a couple hours.
Oh, really? That far? Wow.
Yeah. If you're coming from the Connecticut, you can take the New London ferry that will take you to Orion Point, about 20 minutes from the winery.
Oh.
So it's usually it's a route that people take when they travel north-south, taking the ferry in New London and then visiting our area, the North Fork, and then picking up the Natural Corridor 95 down to after the city, south of the city. Traveling that.
Wow.
A lot of people like that stretch of the island because it's so rural and so beautiful, and it's quite a nice visit. There is some places, by the way, that really looks like in the picture of the Great Gatsby movie when they take their car and go and drive through Long Island. There's some places, a road called Bergen Road, that you see the same farm with the trees on each side. It's very beautiful.
Yeah, I've never been to Long Island. I've been up in that area quite a bit and around the area, but I've never made the trip over to Long Island. So
here is the invitation. You have to come now.
Yeah, now's a good time of year to go up there too. You know, so well, Giles, thank you so very much for taking the time tonight to talk to us and tell us all about Sparkling Point and all that you've done. It's been fascinating, and I'm glad to see that you've wound up in a place that you have grown to love and that you're doing a great job on the champagnes and the sparkling wines there for them. So
it was a It was a pleasure spending this hour with you, and thank you very much to have us on your show.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us. We really did appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Goodbye now.
Goodbye.
Okay.
It is out.
He's gone.
Yeah. We're gone.
For someone who has had the history he has, I mean, growing up outside the door, outside the gate, if you will, of the Champagne District, and seeing how, and I'm talking Champagne District in France, and
right.
The different paint houses and different places he's worked, to end up and have such a passion for Long Island and Sparkling Point, that just really says a lot for the area and a lot for what that area has to offer. It's really impressive.
Yeah. And to be successful and, something to look into, what's in the soil.
Opportunities
are good.
You're absolutely right. And I apologize again. Excuse me. I apologize again for the phone call. Like I say, I have a very good friend of mine who was put in the hospital yesterday, and I was a little concerned when it was his wife that was calling me and not him. So I just wanted to see what it was all about. But he seems to be doing well, so that's good.
Definitely.
So,
what else we got?
Giles didn't mention it. He got himself a Master of Oenology from the University of Montpellier in France. And he was also, his thesis on the technology of wine ultrafiltration was awarded a first prize by Jacques Chirac. How's it pronounced? C-H-I-R-A-C. He was the former president of France who actually gave him the award. He didn't mention that about himself, and I wanted to throw that out and let people know that he's got himself quite, I mentioned before the show, and I will say it at the end, he's got quite a resume and leading him up to where he is now at being the head winemaker there at Sparkling Point. So, fascinating story.
All righty. Next week, what does next week is?
Who knows?
Only in March.
Yeah.
March 7th.
March 7th. Wow. Who knows? We are corresponding with lots of different people right now. I'm going to continue to correspond with some people in Bordeaux, France, and they may be on the show. We may be pre-recording that Sunday morning. Check our website, check our pages here, and if you want to listen to it live, if you can listen to it Sunday morning, but we're looking at pre-recording it and replaying it on a regular time slot. So that's coming up. Plus, I'm corresponding with a girl, Kim, out of Korea, South Korea, who is interested and willing to come on the show. So we've got to coordinate that. And there's also like 5 other emails I'm working on, different people. So we are looking at fair amount of guests coming up over the next 2 or 3 months here. So stay with us. And if you know anybody, or if you are aware of anyone that's in the wine business, or even an author in the wine business, and I need to get our author on too. Gerald Reynolds was supposed to be on, and I haven't had him on yet either. Yeah. He had a great book on wine. And so we've got some exciting things coming up for All About Wine here on 2024. So.
It's easy if you're visiting a winery and, you know, outside of your location or at your location area, you know, you just mentioned to them like, hey, by the way, you know, I listened to the number one rated or whatever it is. throw it out there.
Yeah, the
just,
world
they
renowned.
Did a lot of radios. Yeah, the world renowned, world famous wine show with over 320,000 accumulated. Yet.
I think
sure.
We got more than that now. I haven't looked in a while, but yeah. I think we got more than that now.
Yeah. But anyway, you can just mention it to it casually and say, hey, you know, if you have time on Thursdays, they do a show and you could be a guest. And, you know, that always helps. And
it's
yeah,
amazing
cool.
how they respond, too, because, you know, I do a radio show about wine. Would you like to be on? Oh, that sounds like fun. I mean, that's, you know, just about
yeah.
the response we get from everybody.
I think that's how you and I met. I went to a tasting at your winery,
yeah.
and I think I just mentioned, you know, I do it a podcast or I did a, you know, whatever it was.
You were doing the shuttle takeoffs.
Yes, I was doing shuttle takeoffs. I had a little news thing that I did every once in a while. It was, you know, just a thing that I was doing and went to one of his wine tasting and such a great speaker. I mean, just fantastic stories and everything. And thought, wow, this sounds interesting. And that's how it started. It was like,
yeah.
And that was,
I likes it.
Aren't we
Can
celebrating,
I...
aren't we celebrating our 25th, no, not 25th, 15th anniversary this year? 2009 to 2024.
Yeah.
Is it 15?
It'll be our 15th
wow.
this year. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, the first, I thought it was in March. I gotta go back and check and see when our actual anniversary date was.
I think it was right around the 1st of March. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm glad you said something because I would have forgotten about it and I would have said, oh, you know, we missed our anniversary. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to.
I think it's the first. Yeah, I'll check on that. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I will be emailing you too about Sunday, and I'll get all the people and see if they respond and see what I can find out, and we'll get something going for this Sunday.
More than likely Sunday morning. Anybody out there want to listen to it? We'll put it on social media.
Yeah.
And Facebook and Twitter and let you all know in case you want to tune in live or Thursday. Regular.
Yeah, it'll be rebroadcast. Oh, yeah. Or it will also be rebroadcast, as it is every week, at noon on Flightline Radio, Mike's 24/7 streaming show. And he's live on there from 10 till noon. And then he plays All About Wine and rebroadcasts of All About Wine. So.
Flightline Radio.
Whoa. Wow.
There
did
you
that
go.
Come from?
Yeah. God. Someone got excited.
Wow. I need to turn my headphones down. That just came in. I was expecting it to be a little quiet, but wow.
Yeah, maybe me jump too.
Back away from the hearing thing for a bit. So, yeah, you'll hear this show on this coming Saturday, the 2nd of March. So, it's already starting tomorrow.
March.
We'll close the show here. It is, let me see which monitor I want to see. 3 minutes after 8 o'clock. The other one is, it's not that bad. 2 minutes. We'll talk to y'all probably Sunday. We can get everything coordinated. It'll be Sunday morning, the March the 3rd. And definitely you'll hear it or us on the 7th. We'll see how it works out. But
we'll see how it works out.
Social media. Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Again, thank you, Jaws, for taking the time to join us tonight. It was fantastic. Very informative.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, here we go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebpr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
And green.
There you go.